Hi, I'm Sunny. Oh, here we go again. I'm Sunny and I am an alcoholic. Could you tell? Welcome to the Beacon Group noon meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speaker, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. But we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual awakening, and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting, except while our speaker is sharing. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, which I will time. Then we will split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions end at 12:54. Followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. I have asked Julaine to read the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Can you unmute Julaine?
Yes, are you going to put them up?
No, we do them from
Oh, okay. Hang on. Sorry. I am
always.
Jelaine. I'm an alcoholic. Give me just one second. Can't find my app now.
Leslie at Barcelona always says, get your big book out, dust it off.
Okay, step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. This is going to go slow. I'm so sorry. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Sorry, guys. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. God. Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step 9, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And finally, step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Whew.
Thank you, Julaine. It gave us a moment to ponder on those steps. It was lovely.
Memorize them.
Okay, well, today we are going to hear a talk on step 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable, from Vicki. Vicki W. from Colts Neck, New Jersey. Come on in, Vicki. Can you unmute?
Hello. Yeah. Here I am. Hi, everybody. My name is Vicki. I am an alcoholic, and I am so grateful to be a woman that is sober today and in recovery, and that goes to meetings. thank you, Kirsten, for asking me to speak. You know, it's always, you know, step one, I love step one. Obviously, it's where we come in. And it's, for me, it's kind of a freedom step, or it was a freedom step. You know, sorry, my head's like a little scattered. I had a work presentation right before here. So then I was like, you know, try to like, breathe and be right where I am. I'm really working in my life on like mindfulness and awareness of being where I am. So I am, I came into AA, God willing, by the grace of God, I will have 27 years in November, clean and sober, a day at a time, no weekends off in a row, no substances, no mind altering substances. And I say that only because I've come to learn that everybody has their own journey. But what I know about my journey for me is that any mind altering substance that I use to get me out of myself runs the risk of bringing me back to alcohol, which is my first love. So, and I've also learned that I live a much better life, being free and clear from anything that alters my mind. So, so I came in here, I'm going to be 54 in November as well. So it's kind of cool because I'll be 54. I came in here when I was 27 years old, and I'm going to have 27 years. So half my life, without a drink, which is kind of amazing to me too. And I'm so grateful. So I'm going to backstep a minute. I really like to listen. Everybody's got a story, right? We all got here for a reason. We didn't get here because we had one bad night, right? And everybody's got a story, and some stories are a little bit different, but the thing that's the same for all of us, or for most of us, are the feelings and the inability to control our use once we started. I mean, that's my experience. You know, I have a couple of people in my life who have these crazy, crazy stories. And I'm like, I was talking actually to somebody about it last night. And I said, you know, my story's different than that, but it's not any less painful. And the thought of trying to stop drinking was so difficult. And then the action of trying to stop drinking was so difficult. I'm one of triplets. I'm one of five children. I am one of a family of sober alcoholics now. Everybody, and I'm blessed that everybody in my family, in my direct family, that needed the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has found their way. And has become sober and actually lives a sober life within Alcoholics Anonymous, not just, you know, they didn't just jump in, grab it and leave. They all attend AA. And so my mom is sober a really long time. And but growing up, she was an active alcoholic. And so from a young age, I started to learn what alcoholism was. If you asked me what it was, I would tell you that it was an old man in the street, a bum. That was my visualization of what an alcoholic was. I certainly didn't think it could be young people. I didn't think it could be women, especially women that looked put together. I didn't know it could be lawyers, judges, doctors, priests, you know. I thought it was bad people. I didn't realize that we were sick people just trying to get better. So all these things that I've learned today make such a difference. It's an illness, it's a disease. The way that I think of it is just like an allergy. You know, if I was diabetic and I didn't take my insulin, I'd have a problem, right? So being an alcoholic, if I don't go to Alcoholics Anonymous and share with other people and do certain things, and for me, the steps is one of those things, then I run the risk of relapsing. And I can buy it all back if I want, you know. Nobody forces us to stay here. You know, it's by choice and by, you know, the action that we take. And so anyway, growing up, I grew up in an alcoholic household. And my mom is this beautiful, beautiful woman. She's a successful nurse raising five children. And she was a fall down wet the bed drunk that ruined every holiday. And so I learned quickly that it was not only old men. You know, it could be the Brady Bunch, because that's kind of what my family looked like to the outside. Nobody knew what went on in the inside. But if, you know, in my neighborhood, if you talked about the Qureshi family, it was like, oh my God, they're, you know, amazing and, you know, all these wonderful things. But it wasn't too amazing when your mom was, you know, face planted in the food at the holiday and, you know, and you had to change her wet pants, you know? So, and the other thing about alcoholism for me, and again, anything that I speak about is just kind of what works for me. I personally believe that it can be hereditary. And I had heard a little bit about that, and I'm very much like my mom. And today I hope that people look at me like her, because she's really probably one of the most beautiful souls that you could meet in AA and outside of AA. She's a beautiful woman of recovery and grace. But I can tell you that that's not who she was when I was a kid. She was the person that we were like, oh, she did it again, and afraid to bring people home. And I remember when she first went to AA and it didn't work. And we thought AA didn't work. We didn't know that she didn't work it. I remember her bringing the thing sign home and saying, and her saying to us, they tell me I have to put this upside down. You know, they don't know what they're talking about. And we helped her paint it. Anyway, by God's grace, she got sober at some point, and we didn't like it. By the way, we didn't want a real mother. That ship had sailed. But again, I'm grateful today. So from as pretty much young as I can remember, I had a problem with drinking. You know, if I didn't pick it up, I was okay. And if I did, something happened to me. And I still can't tell you what happened to me. And it really doesn't matter what happened to me. All I know is that something changed in my brain, something switched. And I couldn't remember anymore that I was supposed to go home or not drink so much or, you know, be responsible. I don't know. Alcohol led me. I get that now when they talk about that invisible string and it leading you by the nose. It led me by the nose. So at some point, I became aware at a young age, I became aware that there was something different and wrong with my drinking. And my two brothers, so I have a triplet brother and a triplet sister, and then I have an older brother and an older sister. And both of my brothers are addicts and alcoholics, and both of my sisters are not. And my brothers were drug addicts at that time more than, I mean, you know, they're alcoholics too. But so with drugs, you could see it happening fast. It wasn't okay. Right. But with alcohol, it's a little bit different. So I was trying to kind of figure out what was wrong with me and why, when I would take a drink, I wouldn't remember what went on the night before. You know, I came to learn that that was called the blackout. I also came to learn that that's God's way sometimes of protecting us from things we don't need to remember. but it doesn't feel so good when you're in it. And so I was pretty aware that there was something wrong with me, something wrong with my drinking. My triplet sister and I were really close. And she would look at me and eventually she started giving the same look that my mom, that we would give my mom, you know, the shaking of the head, that disgusted look that I'm sure we can all remember clearly that the people that loved us gave us when we did it again. Or she'd say, "You did it again. You know, you did it again." And I remember her saying one night to me, "I am so afraid to go out with you because I never know what's going to happen." And one night she left me and she was crying and she was like, "I don't know what to do anymore. And I hope you make it home safe." And what a terrible thing to put on, you know, my triplet sister. I mean, we were the same age and she became the responsible mom to me. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. You know, lots of things happened in my active use of drinking. A lot of them not great things. And you know, and I was so lost. And I couldn't hear it from my mom. You know, that's another thing about alcoholism in my experience, is that I had to, somebody, the person that 12-stepped me had to be somebody other than a family member. Because my mom, at some point, I would look at her and think, she thinks everybody's an alcoholic. You know, so I couldn't hear it. You know, she doesn't know that that's just what we do. You know, I don't have kids yet. I don't have to be responsible to them. She did. She's different than me. But this friend of mine had gotten sober. And I love that they talk about in the steps and in the promises that you can see, you know, you can see the spark of life come back into somebody's eyes. Right. And that's what happened to this girl that ended up 12-stepping me. You know, she was relatable. And I saw this spark come back in her life, but I didn't know what it was. And it was AA, it was recovery, it was sobriety. And it was the steps, because she believed in the steps. You know, not everybody that comes in here thinks that the steps are necessary. I'm not here to tell you that you have to or anything else. I'm here to tell you what worked for me. And for me, they were necessary. And they were necessary for me. You know, I periodically revisit them because, you know, through my life, I made a lot of mistakes. So and I want to get better. I want to be better as a person. So this person 12-stepped me, and this is the beauty of, you know, we all know, like, you know, how God works, whatever we happen to believe in. So back then, 27 years ago, cell phones weren't a thing, right? So you had to reach somebody on their home phone. So this girl, when she got sober, you know, girl meets boy, girl gets into a relationship and moves in with boy. So she pretty much moved in with this guy. And for whatever reason, the night that I finally decided to surrender, I picked up the phone and called her, and she was home. And she says to me, we're still great friends. She says, "I don't know why I stayed home that night. I always slept at his house. But for some reason, I stayed home and I was there to pick up your phone call of desperation." You know, just how God works. I love those little miracles that happen. And I remember saying to her, "I need help. I can't stop drinking." And she said, "Finally." And I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "I've been waiting for this phone call." You know, we think nobody sees, nobody knows. And she said, "I've been waiting for this phone call." And I said, "What do I do?" And she said, "You get sober feet." And I said, "What are sober feet?" And she said, "Sober feet are going to bring you to AA meetings." And I didn't know what she was talking about. And we talked for a while, and I talked about this helplessness and hopelessness. And she said, "You know, pray tonight. Just ask God to help you to get you to a meeting tomorrow," because it was late at that point. And I said, "Are you going to meet me there?" And she said, "I can't. I have to work." And I said, "So what do I do?" And she said, "Remember those sober feet I mentioned to you?" She said, "They're going to take you to this meeting." And at the time I lived in Brooklyn, and it was a meeting. It was Our Lady of Angels in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. And she said, "You're going to go there and you're just going to raise your hand and you're going to let people know who you are." And I said, "Well, what if I see anybody that my mom knows?" And she said, "Well, if you see them at AA, they're there for the same reason that you are. It's okay." And you know, because I had no idea. And I went, and I remember it was like these big, humongous, the biggest doors I'd ever seen in my life that I had to open to walk through. And I walked in and it was so bright and people were laughing. And I was thinking, "Oh my God, my life is over. What are they laughing about? You know, I'm in a church basement." what are they laughing about? And I couldn't understand. And, you know, but what happened was I started to hear people talking about what I was feeling. And I couldn't believe it, that they knew. It was like they could see inside my soul. You know, it's the language of the heart. It's the language that only people that have been through it can speak. And I listened, and I felt a little bit better. So little by slowly, I started to go to meetings, and I was afraid to not take suggestions because I didn't know what was going to work for me and what wasn't going to work for me. So I took pretty much most of the suggestions. And I raised my hand. I said, I needed a sponsor at some point. And there was this woman that was friends with my mom, and I didn't know she was friends with my mom, but I thought she was the coolest person I'd ever seen, you know? And I remember, like, it's so funny. I can still feel it. The feeling of walking up to her at the back of the meeting and asking her if she'd be my sponsor. And it was like the hardest words to get out. And I was terrified that she was going to say no. And she was like, yeah, sure. Her name was Maggie. Yeah, sure. You know, give me a call, kid. And wrote her phone number down. And, you know, and we began a journey, a beautiful journey. And I was blessed that she was into the steps. And so we started to work together. And what she told me was, you know, we're not going to worry so much about the timing, in that the steps are going to take you and you'll see. I said, what do you mean? And she said, you'll see, just trust me. And she said, the first thing that we have to do is the first step. And that's all that matters right now. And, you know, and she had gotten me a big book, and she had gotten me the 12 and 12. And she suggested that I open them and that I read them. And she also suggested to me that I, you know, kind of break up my meetings during the week so that I make sure that I make at least 2-step meetings a week, because she said, you have to learn, you know nothing, and you have to learn other people's experience. You don't want to learn other people's advice. You want to hear their experience, how they went through it, right? If they've gone through it, they have something to share with you. And you really have nothing to share right now. So just why don't you put the cotton in your mouth, take it out of your ears, put it in your mouth, and learn to listen, and listen to learn. And I said, okay. And one of the things that I learned about this first step, you know, even now I can, it's like, I feel like I can breathe because there was something so relieving about, relieving to me about learning that there was a name to what was wrong with me. You know, as much as I didn't want to be an alcoholic, at least learning that I was an alcoholic meant that there was help, right? Because AA has been around a really long time, and a lot of people have gotten sober through AA. And so I know it works. And, you know, and they said a lot of things. Stick with the winner, kid. Sit up front. You know, raise your hand. Let people know who you are. They're not mind readers. You know, don't go into the lion's den. You know, you can count days, but make your days count. And, you know, we each only have 24 hours. You know, a drink is only this far away. You know, a drink's not going to jump down your throat. You have to actually pick it up in order to take it. You know, so many things like that's that I just didn't understand. I had no idea, but they simplified it for me. You know, they made it so easy to understand how it worked. And then came the first step, right? We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. So the first step is two parts, and there's two sayings, right? There's a couple of, I love words and I'm a visual person, right? So there's a couple of words that stuck out to me, right? Admitted, powerless, and unmanageable. But there's also another word for me personally that was really important in the first step, and that was accepted. Because at some point I could admit that I was an alcoholic, but I really struggled with accepting it, like gut level acceptance, really believing that I was an alcoholic. I could say it at some point because I was supposed to, but did I actually believe that no matter what, if I put a drink in my system, all bets were off? I had no control over how it was going to go and when it was going to end. And I might not get in trouble every time I drank, but every time I got in trouble, alcohol was involved, you know? So I understood that too. You know, and I remember them saying, you know, the door swings both ways. Well, what does that mean? You know, and they were like, if you're not convinced, why don't you go out and do some more research? Well, what's research? Go out and see if you can drink safely now that you know a little bit. And I remember saying to my sponsor one day, because for a little while in the beginning, I was like, I don't know, maybe I didn't try hard enough. Maybe now that I know a little bit, I can do it differently. And she said to me, so drink. And I said, you're telling me to drink? And she said, no. You're telling me you want to drink, and I'm telling you, knock yourself out. I know who and what I am, and I'll be here waiting if you're lucky enough to come back. And for so that scared me. And she said, you can't leave any back doors open. And so at some point, I admitted I was an alcoholic, and I accepted it. You see, I knew that my life was unmanageable too. That was another thing I could admit, but I didn't understand that it was related to alcohol. Listen, sometimes my life is still unmanageable, and it's related. Today, I choose to live my life sober in all areas of my life. You know, I try to apply the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous into wherever I struggle because it works, right? I can use those 12 steps with eating, with my procrastination and my ADHD brain. You know, I can use it with anything. You know, everything is a day at a time, a moment at a time, a step at a time, right? And it's also sharing with another person what my struggles are with another person that's been there and done that. And then allowing them to tell me how they got through it. And that's what I love. And so, you know, so we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. And, you know, first of all, the first word of the first step is we. And I love that too. It doesn't say I, it says we. It says, you know, allow other people in, you know, allow them along your journey to help you stay sober. And then, you know, one of the other things I learned is that there's consequences to my behaviors, you know, and just because I'm an alcoholic doesn't mean I'm not responsible, right? I am responsible for the choices and decisions I made. I might not have made them consciously, but I still have to accept my level of responsibility to whatever choices I make in my life. And the other thing that I learned is that it's not about willpower, right? You know, and that's why these steps are in place. Because me, of my own volition, you know, maybe it'll take me so far, but eventually I'll forget, or eventually I will, you know, do it my way, which never worked. It's not about willpower, it's about an illness. And that's really how I think about it. And it's a spiritual malady. You know, I had this sponsor, his name was God, I just blanked out. I was gonna say Harry, I don't know if I was looking at somebody here. He ended up relapsing after, I think, I want to say 15 or 18 years, and he died, unfortunately. But he was so amazing. And he used to say to me all the time, Vicky, you know, it's body, mind, and spirit. You know, eventually we have to take care of all areas of our life, you know, body, mind, and spirit. But you start out with the admitting and the alcohol, you know, problem. And you go from there. And my friend Allison, the one that I had called that night when I had surrendered, right? Because I remember hitting my knees in my house and begging God to help me make sense. Like I just didn't know what was wrong with me. I had no idea what was wrong with me, and I had no idea how to change it. And I felt like such a disappointment in every area, to everybody, to myself, and to the people around me. And I just beg God, whatever this is, please take this pain away and show me the light. Like, show me what to do and where to go. And that girl, and we were friends, but we weren't great friends. So why I picked up the phone and called her, and why she was home and answered the phone, you know, that's God's miracle. You know, that's one of those God winks. And it started my journey. And so she used to say to me, you know, say the serenity prayer, say it 1,000 times a day if you have to. And then she said, when you're ready, you can say, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, my thought process right now, the courage to change the things I can, turning it over to you, God, and the wisdom to know the difference, right? So I could turn it over to God and allow him to work in my life. But again, me on my own, I can't do anything. So there was all these little things that started to work along the way. And then my sponsor said to me, why don't we write down some of the unmanageability in your life and some of the areas where maybe you try to control your drinking? Like, let's do, because again, I'm kind of a tangible person. So as much as we talked, I needed to see it. Like, I needed to look at the fact that I had tried over and over to control my drinking, and that whatever that thing is in my brain, those crossed wires, that I had no control over them. And listen, so this is the part I was talking about before. You know, there are people that have these insane stories. They go to jail, they're running around with guns in their hands and all this other stuff, right? And I might not have experienced that. I wasn't running around with guns in my hand. But I can tell you that I experienced that feeling of, how am I ever going to live my life without drinking? How am I ever going to stop drinking and it be okay and live and not just survive and get by, but live, actually live my life? I didn't know how. Sometimes I am still honestly so amazed at the fact that I live my life. You know, I just went to visit my girls in Indiana this weekend for Dad's weekend. My ex-husband and I went together, and my ex-husband's pretty newly still sober. He had been sober for a long time and relapsed. And so he chooses not to put himself anymore in harm's way, you know, for the first time in his life. He knows that he doesn't belong places, and they go to Indiana, and oh my God, the drinking is just insane. And my daughter said to me at one point, Mom, so-and-so's mother was throwing up in the middle of the bar in front of all the other parents and all the other kids. And she was horrified. And so-and-so's mother was dancing inappropriately with somebody's father, and they're both married. And she said, you don't do that. You know, I'm so happy. And my girls drink and I worry about them, but they recognize what sobriety looks like today. You know, they see the difference by the grace of God. They can call me over the summer. My daughter called me at about 5 in the morning to tell me that one of her friends was passed out and they couldn't wake her up, and that I needed to come and take them to the hospital because the mother that was there with them was drunk and couldn't drive. And I went, and that kid had alcohol poisoning. And the doctor said to us, if you let her sleep it off, she probably would have went into an alcoholic seizure and coma, you know? So it shows me all the time that nothing changes, that I'm not really missing anything, that I am blessed and grateful to be an alcoholic that's sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that there are steps that I take to you know, keep my sobriety safe. And it's funny, I wanted to mention this, even though it's kind of like jumping ahead a little bit. You know, I told you that my sponsor said to me, you know, we're going to, you know, the steps will take you, don't worry. You know, like as we go along, the most important step right now is the first step. And then, you know, we'll move on to the second and third and so on. And so at some point in early recovery, I used to go to this meeting in Bay Ridge, I went to the feelings meeting, but there was also a beginner circle. And I used to go there, and I stole lipstick. Thank you. I stole, is that 5 minutes or 2 minutes? Five? Okay, thanks. So I stole lipstick in CVS, right? And I stole it because they charge a stupid amount of money for lipstick, and I feel like they're robbing me. So I figured if I stole one or two, we'd be even. And I thought it was okay. And I was, I don't know, maybe I was sober for a year or no less because I was inside the circle. So you were under a year. But it was weighing on me. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I said it. I was so afraid to say it at a meeting because I thought people were just going to think I was a thief and not trust me. And they were going to look down on me. And so I shared and they laughed at me. And they were like, it's okay. You know, it's good for you for being honest. So my sponsor said to me, okay, so we're going to take a look at step 6 and 7. Right? We have defects of character and we have to change them. And I said, well, wait a second. I'm only on, I think, step 2 or 3. You told me these come in order, so I'm not there yet. So she said, so what do you think? You can keep stealing until you get there? No. The steps take us, you know? So right now you're aware of some bad behavior that you've done and you have to stop doing it. And then we're going to go back and go in order, you know? So, and that's one of the things I love about the step 2, but nobody thought, you know, they were like, okay, you know, so don't steal again, you know? I love AA. I love what it's done for me. I love what my life has been. And it hasn't always been easy. I got divorced in recovery. I had cancer in recovery. I lost some people tragically in recovery. Nobody promises you that everything around you is going to be wonderful in here. What they promised me was that I was going to get better. I'd learn how to handle things better, and I'd have a support network, you know, to support my journey. I didn't have to do it by myself. The other thing they promised me was that if I didn't pick up a drink, I couldn't get drunk, and that the drink didn't have to be the answer to any of my problems, because if I picked up a drink, my problems were going to have puppies, you know, they'd be tenfold. You know what I mean? And they also told me that early on in recovery, I had to build a really strong foundation, because they said a house without a foundation can collapse. But if you build a foundation somewhere along the way, the only thing between you and a drink might be that prayer to God and your foundation. You know, what you know now about how good your life is, and that alcohol doesn't cure anything, and that one drink leads to the next, to the next. You know, one drink's never enough, 1,000 too many, or no, one drink's too many, 1,000 never enough. I always say backwards. And I got that too. So I am so grateful to be a member in good standing in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, to know today that I don't need to pick up any substance in order to get through life. I need to pick up the phone, and it's not always easy, but it is doable. And I also know that if I do choose to pick up a drink, the biggest mistake I could ever make is to not come back. So thanks for letting me share.